Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey guys, welcome to Steel Wars. I'm comedian Steel Saunders and I do love Star Wars, and each week we talk to someone of interest about it. And this week on this show we're talking to three people about it, as it is our fourth Mandalorian chit-chat about episode 4, The Sanctuary. And joining us once again, the only person daring enough to make it through all four episodes with me from the Canto Bite Dispatch, it's Emily Lind. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are you doing, Steel?
I'm okay. But you did say that you said bad things about me on your last podcast you recorded. So I'm sort of enjoying the last blissful moments of our friendship.
I mean, you had to be expecting that after you spoiled something for me and continued to not send me a voicemail that you promised me
three months ago. I sent you the voicemail, spoiler alert. And
after we recorded.
Yes. On the last episode, I may have... It's like, my thing is, if Lucasfilm have put it out, it's fair game. And I may have mentioned something that... Emily didn't know about, but we'll leave it there. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You know, who could have guessed that Yaddle was returning? But returning to the podcast from our Page Wars, a Patreon podcast, which is very popular, bringing his immense wealth of quickly read Star Wars information. It is the King of All Toms. King Tom Chansky. How you doing, Tom?
I am well, Steel. Thank you. And I'm looking forward to the next episode of the Canto Bite Dispatch.
Yeah, that is sad.
I always am, but even more now.
Yeah. It's a bit too hot a sizzle. And one of our oldest podcast friends, and a podcast friend's not the most important, I think so, from the soon-to-be RIP'd Comedy Film Nerds, it is our buddy Chris Mancini. How you doing, mate?
Great to be here. It's four episodes of Mandalorian already.
I know. We did our episode of Comedy Film Nerds together, gushing about it very early in the morning, or, you know, podcast very early. Mm-hmm. Possibly it was in the PM. I don't know. But it did seem early that I went to your house. But how have you been enjoying it thus far, Chris?
I've absolutely loved it, although I was thinking of you while I was watching it. I think I'd like to watch an episode of The Mandalorian at Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland. I think that would be perfect.
That would be having your cake, eating it too, dripping it in chocolate topping, and then gargling it. choose one of the two, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it could be a bit much. I saw today, good use of the license, they were doing cast interviews at Galaxy's Edge on one of the balconies. And I was like, that's good synergy. All the guests that were there were very excited to see Daisy Ridley and all that. So
They're ramping up for the big ride to open.
Yeah, well, in Florida. So
In Florida, it's the 5th. We don't get it till January.
Yeah, I am very keen for that. But let's talk episode 4 of The Mandalorian, an episode that, for me, got better on the second showing. So it was very interesting. It is directed by Bryce Dallas Howard of Running from Dinosaurs fame, and she uses a bit of a Running from Dinosaurs experience to good use here. And I love that she's got her own perfect Star Destroyer-esque opening with the close-up on that sea creature that you think is like you're in the ocean and it's really big, and then it gets picked up and it's a little blue tadpole. I very much enjoyed that opening shot. You're a filmmaker, Chris. You'd be impressed by such framing.
Well, I was more impressed that she basically gave me the sci-fi cliff notes of the movie Seven Samurai in like 40-some minutes. I thought that was the most impressive part of that episode.
Seven Samurai, they must have ripped off one of the best Simpsons episodes, Bart the General.
Exactly, what, yeah.
What about the A-Team episode, Bad Day at Black Rock?
What about every A-Team episode? What are you talking about? Wasn't that the plot of everyone?
Pretty much, yeah.
The first time I went through that story of training the village to, you know, fight off, you know, fight for themselves, it wore me a little bit the first time around, but we'll get to that. One of the little treats, which is one of my favorite things of The Mandalorian, is just the little Star Wars treats that we get. The farming droid. Did you guys see this?
That was really cool. Like, yeah, right at the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like an R2 Pelican. It was just...
Yeah, and you're wondering, like, well, why aren't there more of those? They seem very useful. Why is there only one, you know, to help farming?
How many vacuums do you own, Chris?
Four, I think there but were, you can't go by me.
I think there were a few at the end of the episode.
Well, okay.
I think.
As the originals, the sacred text of the original Star Wars told us, those droids can be pretty expensive or hard to come by. But yeah, I loved the opening scene. Very sort of familiar yet off-world. I loved... The this world has hyperdrive travel and lightsabers, but when it comes to balls, we just make them out of a bunch of sticks. Like their ball technology hasn't really evolved, and they've had a little twig. But then the Marauders came out, and I'm not sure if we've got any Battle for Endor fans here, but I was getting serious Battle for Endor Marauders fan. You with me, Tom?
I can definitely see the connection.
Yeah, it's sort of, I don't know, it was sort of just like sweetly campy how maraudy they were. They were really maraudy. I enjoyed that.
Like when you look at like the race of marauders, you look at them and go, well, how could they be anything but marauders? They're not going to be accountants. You know, there's not a lot of job opportunity for, you know, someone who looks like a marauder. You have to be a marauder.
I was born to maraud. I live my life a quarter maraud at a time. Yeah. One of the great movie quotes. And the mother and the child have to hide under a basket, which, you know, is definitely got all that. I don't know. Did you guys see that thing on Twitter, people arguing whether it was like a samurai show or a Western?
Oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's... hey, Twitter will argue about anything. you know, it can be both. You know, you can have pieces of one thing and pieces of the other, considering they were both, you know, heavily influenced by each other anyway. It's okay. It can all be mixed up together to create something entertaining. It's totally fine.
Yeah, it was kicked off by John Rocha from Collider, who's a really nice guy. And, like, it was... And then, he said it was a samurai film... And then the guys at Lucasfilm said, oh, no, it's a Western. We made it. But I just think it's like it's Star Wars. Star Wars is like an amalgam of all these things put into one.
Yeah, I mean, how many – it depends. I mean, how many, you know, influences do you need to go back to? Do we need to all the way go back to the samurai movie Hidden Fortress that, you know, influenced Star Wars? Do we go back to Seventh Samurai, which was, you know, the framework of this movie, and including other movies like, oh, I don't know, A Bug's Life or Magnificent Seven. There's certain things that, you know, that it's clearly influenced by, but it doesn't make them bad or wrong.
Yeah, I just, you know, like, I sort of thought it was weird that they came out and, you know, full respect to the...
This is an outrage.
The guys at Lucasfilm, but it's just like, it's Star Wars. It's like, it's the Star Wars taco. You got all these sweet things in there. I did think, I'm not one to second guess a mother. That is one thing I've learned in the last year of my life. Came out of the basket a bit quick, you know?
Yeah.
Spend some time in that basket. Really make sure your marauders have done their full maraud. They're not coming back for any late marauding.
Oh, you know, you don't know the backstory. She may have had basket phobia, and it was very difficult for her to be under there for too long.
The basket's got holes. She could kind of see and hear.
Hey, don't disrespect her lifestyle, Tom. That is not cool. Then we cut to the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda, or Yoju, if you will.
Yoju. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
No.
You know, Baby Yoda, neither Baby nor Yoda, but that's okay.
Yeah. Yoju, if you will.
Yeah, Yoju.
Where do you stand on Yoju, Tom? Have you been caught up by Yoju?
Of all the names for Baby Yoda I've heard, it's one of them. It's not the worst.
Come on, you're kidding me.
Which one is the worst that you've heard, Tom?
Yes.
Someone said Yiddo. Like kiddo, but Yiddo.
Oh.
I did not like that.
Wow.
So Yoju is better than Yiddo.
Okay.
Yoju with a bullet. And up the front, the show gives the listener or the viewer what they want, and that's Baby Yoda being Baby Yoda, a little bit of cuteness. And one thing that I've found, like, out of Star Wars, but I'm glad they're doing it, is this episode references time a lot. Or for Star Wars, it references time a lot. And he says he's planning on staying a few months on the planet. And I actually thought that he would stay there a few... Like, I thought, okay, he's going to stay there a few months. That's what's going to be the episode about. I bought it. But I sort of just... I like that they're mentioning, even though, they don't have months or whatever. Well, they don't have A's, but they've got an A-wing, so whatever. But I was able to sort of buy into the story because of the time mentioning. Tom, you read and you consume a lot of this Star Wars stuff. Like, how do you find the use of months and weeks in this ep?
In this episode, I think it's good. I like it. I like Star Wars stories to take some time. I think usually in the movies and in various books, time is very much a thing of convenience. It's however long the story needs it to be. So here I like the idea that the Mandalorian was planning on laying low. I wonder if at any point he was thinking, when he said we're going to stay here a few months, I wonder if he was thinking, hey, maybe I'm going to find some place I can kind of ditch Baby Yoda and move on myself at the end of a few of the months that I'm here.
And a place where I can get a decent bowl.
Yes.
I can't believe you thought he was going to ditch Baby Yoda, Yoju. But I do like that the open-endedness of this show, like, I've got no idea, like... Like, do you know what I mean? If you're sort of watching
something... Oh, right, yeah.
Like, you can... Oh, they're not going to stay there a few months or whatever. Like, it's just a route... Something's going to happen. I sort of... The fact that I've got, like, no idea about how this series, like, ends at the end of season one,
They're not going to show a ton of Mando's jetpacking in to save the day until the last episode.
Now, Emily.
Yes.
I don't want to ostracize you in this part of the podcast, well, but just kick back and just let the experts, you know.
Oh, I cannot wait.
Run with this. But the Mandalorian just asks Baby Yoda, Yoju, if you will, just to stay in the spaceship. Now, I'm on this show with two other fathers, and as we know, fathers, it's the hardest job in the world, without question. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing comes close. You just wouldn't know, Emily. But leaving a baby in a spaceship, like, I know we have a lot of hard to comprehend concepts in Star Wars. A lady floated through space. A green goblin lifted an X-wing, but leaving a baby in the spaceship, like, to me, King Tom seems like not very realistic.
No, and he didn't even, like, try to roll the windows down or anything like that.
D- didn't even try to strap him into something.
No, there's no baby seat or anything.
I mean, when he found him, he was in a self-contained sealed orb. He could have put them back in there. Like, look, just stay in your orb. I'll be back in a couple of hours. This will keep you safe, and it's climate controlled.
Well, no.
Werner, they found that in the garbage.
Yeah, they found that. They found that trashed at the in the second or the third episode. When he went back, he saw it trashed, which I said last episode, Chris.
Oh, right.
That, like, as a new father, that really upset me because of, like, the resale of, like, baby products. That you're just like, this Werner guy doesn't know how expensive this baby is to look after.
Yeah. Now, you know how hard it is to put a floating orb on a registry?
So yeah, I thought it was kind of weird. Like, I'm just like, as if you can leave baby. But then he decides to take him with him. And now, as a Star Wars nerd, I just find it, the way he just lets Yoju, like, just walk out when he's like this highly wanted bounty. Every time, admittedly, the visual is so cute of him, like, walking through the little forest to the thing. But I'm just like, these fobs, they're out there. Like, cameras are invented, space cameras, Star Wars space cameras. Like, this is meant to be a, you know, a very savvy bounty hunter with a great reputation. He seems like he's inviting trouble with this Yoju, just dragging it out as bait.
Isn't that kind of the classic, like, you know, the hardened bounty hunter or assassin that suddenly gets saddled with a kid and then that kind of melts his heart a little bit? So it's also a trope that we always fall for as viewers too. I'm like, I've seen this before, but I'm still on board.
Yeah, what were we gonna say, Emily?
Well, at least get like a little baby Yoda Bjorn or something. I mean, if for no other reason, then little Yoda's legs are very short. And if nothing else, even if it's not for Yoda's sake, don't you want to walk a little bit faster? Then baby Yoda can walk.
Yoju, you know, if you will.
That is a great idea, Emily, because he does have that cape. And I had this thing when my son was born, it like this big wrap thing you wrap the kid up in and you can carry it. Like, it's like a giant sling you carry it on your chest. He could surely do that with his cape.
Very tricky to fold those bad boys from memory.
Can you, yes. Now, I don't know all of the Force powers, especially if you add into all the video games and everything else. Is there like a Force float where Baby Yoda could, you know, float behind the Mandalorian by using his Force powers?
I feel like he could, but I don't know how the, like a 50-year-old Yoju, maybe he can't as yet. But even Yoda wasn't so showy. He sort of got about on a little like hover pad during the prequels. He didn't like to just float about for, you know, he was sort of a bit humble with it or just couldn't be bothered. But I loved the bar set. I was wondering last week, we had on Dominic Pace, that was a bounty hunter on The Mandalorian, and he explained how Werner Herzog's office it's all those LCD screens. Like, none of those walls are there, none of the stuff in the background's there. So I was wondering, I kept like looking at the bar, like all the sort of wood, like trying to work out what was like actually there and not. Did that run through your mind after last week, Emily, or are you invested to be sort of debunking the effects?
I mean, I sort of thought about it on my second viewing. The first viewing, I'm just totally in, but it like there's no way I can tell.
This little tiny thing. First of all, Lothcat. That was amazing.
That was cool. Because I was watching that and I'm thinking, where do I recognize that from? I don't think I've seen it before, but I did just an animated form. Now it was it's more of live action. Technically, they're both animated, but it was from Rebels, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we also saw it, Chris, at Galaxy's Edge. Remember, it was like in that little hutch thing in the creature shop.
Oh right, yeah, I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is it like an animatronic thing?
Yeah,
the one at Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah. And
it was.
And the shopkeeper tells you that he found it out in the forest and he's nursing it back to health, and it sort of breathes and makes little random noises. So very happy to see the Lothcat. But the opening of Cara Dune, I sort of, this one little thing bugged me. Like, he walks in and there's a close up of her, or not a close up, but sort of like a mid shot establishing she's there. And then it goes to this really nice long shot of the Mandalorian sitting down and she's in the background out of focus. And then as he sits down, the focus changes from him to her in the background, sort of revealing her. And it's such a like awesome shot, but it's sort of blown it by the initial shot of her. Like, you're not introducing her with that focus change. You've already shown this very TV-esque sort of mid shot of her. Is that, am I over editing at home? I feel like.
Are you armchair editing?
It just sort of bugged me that, like, you give it this like close up and then there's this really beautiful long shot that would have been a really nice sort of introduction, but you know, save the close up for later. Do you know what I mean? Just seeing her in the distance.
Yeah, it's definitely editing change. My personal preference is to see the long first and then the close up. But yeah, it's an artistic choice.
Yeah, but the shot where the focus change was. Mwah. And speaking of, mwah, loved how much the Mandalorian had no interest in ordering soup for himself.
can we talk about this waitress who is like, I don't know what it is, but she's like straight out of an American sitcom or something. Like, you could see her on Mad About You. Like, I don't know why that's my go-to sitcom, but it was very human.
Emily, you look great for making references that old. That is.
But she just seemed very earthy, and I don't know what it is that drew, like, occasionally in, it seems to be in The Mandalorian, it's happened before where I'm like, oh, that's an earth person.
Well, she also mentions that Kara's been there for a week, which is also very earthly, but I'm enjoying knowing the time. But yeah, it's, I was sort of like, she's the Mandalorian's Dexter Jetster, just running her thing.
I was waiting for her to call him Hun.
It says something about you, Tom.
It's just too much time spent.
He didn't order anything else. It's like, well, if you don't like soup, you know, we've never really seen you eat. I know you have to take the helmet off to eat, but could you order something to go? Like, you know, we never see that his ship's stocked with food either.
What about the space straw? Have we not thought about busting out the Mandalorian space straw? Just up there. Or Mandalorians, because they're all so decked out, they're the type of people to have, you know, people you just sort of see them on the street and they've got a backpack with a little sippy straw coming out of it that's sort of meant for high altitude adventure, but they're just like, I'm in the mall, and I might get thirsty.
Maybe it has baby food in it or something like that that's easy to get through a straw.
Excellent. And I do like the Mandalorian. Big tipper. Big tipper.
Yes.
Very impressive. Very impressive. Then after complaining about it for the last couple of episodes, he goes out to confront Cara Dune and flicks some more cash to the barkeep to look after Yoju. Because I was getting tired of him just having him like float along and sort of like be a video game character. But that sort of it I like that. And then they get into a sweet little battle, which I thought was pretty compelling. And then we hit the now infamous Yoju sipping tea incident. have we all been swept up in this meme, King Tom? How are you looking?
I've used it once already. the animated GIF. Big fan of it.
You know, it's easy to wash down frogs, you know, with sipping tea.
have you utilized this GIF in your internet toings and comings, Emily?
I have, and I feel like it's something I would normally already be sick of and annoyed by, but for some reason when it comes to Baby Yoda, I have no limit, and I will just accept all of the cuteness and all of the memes. I just don't care.
Emily, Yoju's number one fan. Good to hear. Good to hear. She loves the Yoju. when Gina Carano says Endor, I don't know what happened, but I felt warm. I felt part of the universe. I felt like the universe like knew me. I just her casually mentioning Endor, it just made me so happy for some bizarre reason. Like,
which made you more happy, that reference or the reference to Life Day?
I would say Endor, because
Endor, okay,
because one is my favorite thing, mm-hmm. and the other thing is that thing. It's fine. I love a good Life Day reference, but
Steele's war on Life Day.
But what did you guys think of Gina Carano? I sort of thought she had like the campy comic book come to life acting style, which is kind of perfect for a Star Wars TV show down.
Well, her background is in, you know, I think it's Ultimate Fighting or something like that, if I remember correctly. And, you know, she just has that, you know, physical presence on screen, which is really great. And I thought she, you know, I didn't, you know, not believe for a second that she was a commando and that, you know, there was some backstory that we hadn't heard the complete version of yet. So I was intrigued by the whole thing.
Now, Tom, you're a canon junkie. How does all this Republic or Rebellion Commando like fit in with like Battlefront and the stories told there? Like, what do we know about these shock troopers, I should say?
It fits. I don't know that they've ever been called shock troopers before. Maybe in the one of the Force Awakens comic series, Shattered Empire, because we are introduced to a special forces unit there. The Rebellion, just like the Empire, they do have special forces unit and they operate in all sorts of different ways. So it fits that, you know, she would be the best of this class of soldier, and she her personality, she certainly carries that off in this role.
Now, did you get the feeling that she knew, like, they sort of came to an agreement, like, I don't know, they sort of just reached his stalemate and just went, okay, let's just agree to disagree. Does she know the Mandalorian's on the run, or is her vibe, which is like way cooler, like, sure, I have a bounty on me, but I'm going to make it way too much trouble for you to bother going after me? What's her strategy?
I thought it was mutually understood that they were both on the run and trying to hide.
Yeah. I don't think she knows quite how much trouble he's in or has any idea what the score is, but I mean, just the fact that he's showing up there with a small child,
Yoju,
and not on a job would clue her in that something's going on with him.
That's pretty astute, because when I go anywhere with my small child, people realize I'm in a lot of trouble. So very apt. They sort of agree to just go their separate ways. And I like the weird codes of just like, he just without any argument goes to Yoju, oh, this planet's taken, let's get a new planet. Like, you can, like, last episode we're talking about
more in the galaxy.
Yeah, last episode we're talking about Barleys, or when you're playing Tag Safe or whatever you call it here in America. But she Barleyed or called an entire planet as her hiding spot, which I thought was, I just like the code of just like, all right, well, she's here first. Next planet. It's fine. Yeah.
I got to keep going until I find someone who's not on the run, you know, that's taking up an entire planet that I can't stay on now.
And then it cuts to him. He's at the Razor Crest and the villagers come.
The slowest transport of all time.
You didn't like the little cart?
It was so, it would have been faster to walk there.
God, you're so angry or worked up about how slow it is that you can't even wait to get to that part of the show.
New York. You got to walk.
Now we know why they were there a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so they come to try get the Mando service, and he's got no interest. He knows they don't have much cash. But then after they complain about how far back they have to travel to this desolate village where they live, his little Mandalorian antenna pricks up, and he realizes maybe he can get somewhere to for them safely to live. Now, the first time I watched the episode, I didn't pick up on that's how he knew to ask. Like, I didn't see him click that, like, by saying that. It was just really weird. Finally, when someone doesn't get to do anything and they whinge as they walked off, that it paid off for them. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you don't get backstage somewhere or something and go, I'm their biggest fan. Oh, biggest fan. Okay, well, come in then. Do you know what I mean? But, it didn't, like, that sort of little link didn't click with me the first time. So I was sort of on my second watch. I was like, they write things to make sense. And I did like also the unspoken diss that while Mandalorian wouldn't even look at how many credits there, he instantly assumes that Cara Dune will do the job for that amount of credits. Like he's just so high end. I very much love that.
Because they were both looking for that, kind of that isolation to get away and hide. So they, he probably thought, well, if I need to hide, so does she. So she's probably going to say yes to this.
And get some sweet bunts out of it as well.
And all the soup they can eat.
Soupsy. And they arrive at the village after, apparently, Emily... We love the crafts of Star Wars. Do you know what I mean? The Land Speeder, the Jawa Sandcrawler, the AT-AT, the AT-AT. And easily up amongst those ranks is the Mandalorian horse and cart droid thing. Known for its speed. Would you like to take us through the scene? Now this isn't pod racing.
All I was thinking is when I'm stuck on the subway and it's going at half speed for no reason whatsoever.
You think there's a problem with the droid at the front?
I'm just slowly getting angrier and angrier as I'm sitting there trying to get to work.
Wow. So new project, and that is making GIFs of that thing move extra slow to reply to Emily's angry tweets to me when I've done something very bad. So they arrive at the village and all the kids instantly fall in love with Yoju. Except there's this one kid. He looks at him for about 2 seconds and then just looks away bored. Oh, okay. So the 50-year-old little green force goblin, not that interesting to you? Like, where's the twig ball? Like, it's just... He looks away from Yoju within 2 seconds.
Have to look for this
now,
kid.
Did you notice this on the first or second viewing?
Every viewing. Three. Count them. Three viewings. Every time, I'm like, dude, theater of the mind. Like, I'm not sure. Do you think they were on set with Yoju, or Yoju did his scenes later on?
It might have been a combination where there was something on set, like a puppet, and then they went over it with a computer afterwards.
Yeah, did you guys... There was an interview, I think, today with Bryce Dallas Howard, and she was saying how her kids knew about Yoju, and every time she like dropped them off at school and stuff, she had to say, "Now, what's the thing we don't talk about?" And they go, "The baby." And
yeah.
So
I am slightly annoyed that none of these kids ask the Mandalorian, "Hey, what's your little Baby Yoda's name?"
They're there for,
or what's your name?
Oh, yeah, they're there for 3 weeks and they're just calling each other mate the whole time.
Yeah, not a lot of naming going on.
So then we meet Amara. Who is, we've already met, she's the basket case from the start of the episode. What? It's just...
It was a dad joke.
Okay.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you've... This is a horrific situation to be in, the Mandalorian's in. She informs the Mandalorian... she apologizes for the room and then tells him there's some folded, like, blankets. Now, have you ever been checked into an Airbnb when the owner's there and they just keep telling you stuff? Like, oh, you know, sorry, but the room's a bit messy. I folded some blankets. Oh, you folded them. That's great. Did you fold, like, the Wi-Fi password on top of them? Because if not, tell me the Wi-Fi password. That's all I want to know. Keep your blankets. So it's always so frustrating when they keep talking to you. You're tired. You've just gone on a 12-hour cart ride. You want to take your helmet off.
You just want to take your helmet off at some point.
Yeah. That said, I once at San Diego Comic Con, I had a Airbnb and I found my hostess drunkenly asking me if I was still awake at 3 a.m. in the morning one time. So
as far, oh my gosh.
I feel like I left a... I was too scared to leave a bad review. But I feel like the Mandalorian had a better experience than I. Then Winter, her daughter, enters the room, and then the Mando almost deep fries her in his sputtering, like, flame liquid just for walking in the room. And then Amira has the gall to apologize to the Mandalorian, saying, oh, she's a bit nervous around strangers.
Yeah, with flamethrowers.
Yeah. Well, he's the one that turns around and, like, almost kills her because, like, oh, you walked into the room. Like, if anyone's nervous around strangers, it's that helmeted dude. So,
yeah. Or just close the door if you're skittish about people walking in.
Exactly. And then she tells her daughter, like, oh, the man that almost killed you is going to protect you from the bad men. And she says, like, oh, good.
This guy in the helmet, you know, you can't see his face, and he has all these weapons strapped to him, and he just almost killed you for walking into a barn. Yeah, he's the good guy.
So everybody's thinking, well, don't get too close to him, but point him in the right direction. He might be pretty useful.
Point him at some of those blue fish, and then we've got a cook up. Then she asks about how long his helmet has been on for, which led to a great joke of saying he took it off yesterday, but to no one. Now, this whole deal with the Mandalorians not taking off their helmet, it's all new to me. You know, he explains the way, but not what the way is.
Right.
Tom, have you been digging around? Have you got some theories about what's going on with this helmet business?
I have ideas, nothing concrete, nothing based in any canon that we know of, because this is all new. My only guess is it's connected to the Purge, because we've seen other sets of Mandalorians, both on Mandalore and other places throughout the galaxy, in full armor, take off their helmet, show their face to other people who are not Mandalorians. Filoni is part of this, Favreau is part of this, and they are both very thorough when it comes to Star Wars, so I can't imagine it's something that they haven't thought about. If I had to guess, my theories run along the lines of it having something to do with the Purge, where they might not be all that's left of Mandalore, but it's this specific group of Mandalorians that's on the run, or at least in hiding. And that is part of their code. But I have nothing in canon or nothing based off of what we've been given to back that up.
Okay. Then they do a bit of recon. They see the footprint. And then we get a landmark moment in Star Wars history, you guys. The first time that AT-ST is said. It was very special. It was poetry to my ears. And then we're cut to the amazing scene of the Mandalorian telling the villagers, bad news, you can't live here anymore. I loved it. Loved it. Did anyone find that a bit much, or is it just across the board? Because whenever anything funny happens in Star Wars now, I'm like, oh, is half the people going to hate that because they're taking it a bit out there?
It made me laugh.
It's possible.
Yeah, I thought it was funny.
I think one of my favorite parts, too, is like was they were, you know, very, very nervous about the one AT-ST that was there. And they did the same thing that they did with when we first saw the bodyguards in the stormtrooper outfits, where they were dirty and, you know, not kept well. And this AT-ST was also dirty. It had like a weird glow in the cockpit. And I thought it was really cool. Like, this is what would happen if the Empire wasn't around anymore to maintain their vehicles. It would slowly deteriorate and then it would fall into the hands of marauders.
The I thought the red light was so good, and it sort of fit in because we've never really seen them at night. So it was like, well, they probably would have like a red, like submarine light in, you know, so they can see everything. That would make, you know, pretty sweet.
I mean, it was shot like eyeballs. It was a forest monster, like a troll or something, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, well, the start thing when the trees all the shook at the start of the episode definitely gave me like smoke monster flashbacks in Lost.
Mm-hmm.
Then they can. I like how they complain that they didn't tell them about the AT-ST, which
right,
which is very very true to Star Wars. Because if you went to a new Star Wars friend's house and they didn't tell you they had an AT-ST and they did, you'd be annoyed. Like you should have told me about this. We could have.
Way to bury the lead.
Yeah,
I know.
Man. It does a little. Like when you push the button, does a little dance. The best. Then we get the live action reenactment of the Simpsons episode Bart the General, the original source material for this storyline. And I enjoyed the neat trick because these shows just get so hyper nitpicked and sometimes a little bit maliciously. And it's a neat trick that the Mandalorian explains Kara's military past. So the villagers take her seriously, and then the people on the TV on the other side judging her that, oh, what's she doing? They take her seriously as well. So I enjoyed that little, like, we're just filling in this little gap of Star Wars lore. And then we get, I'm not sure if you guys have seen this, the controversial scene. The shooting scene with O'Mara. Did you see?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't believe that. You know, there's going to be a controversy or anything. I didn't see anything controversial at all. And I'm like, no, people are upset over it. The fact that, you know, she could actually shoot straight.
And I saw that some guy was furious it didn't have kickback. Like, and her stance wasn't, like, the correct stance. And then you look at like Han Solo shooting his like blaster in front of the Millennium Falcon. It's like, that doesn't seem, I'm not sure if that's a correct gun stance either. It's
Hey, Mr. Angry YouTube guy, how many space rifles have you shot anyway?
My theory was that he shot one rifle at like a gun range at a Bucks weekend and it kicked back too much. And he was really embarrassed in front of all his friends. So now when he watches anything, it's like, oh, it didn't kick back. They kick back in real life. Yep. Yeah.
These space guns could have inertial dampeners in them. You don't know.
It's and it's this balance of like, should we update like stuff so it's more realistic for now? So space gun jolts. Or should we keep it the same as the films that you love so much and you want to hearken it back to? Like, I don't know, you can't have it both ways, but it's quite the trope that the war widow knows how to shoot. And did you notice the gun, Tom, looked a bit Bosk-esque? Kenner Bosk.
It was a Relby, the same weapon that Bosk uses in Empire Strikes Back.
You just said a word I've never heard before. One more time.
Relby. R-E-L-B-Y.
What a source of information this guy is, huh?
That is why he's the king of all toms.
Oh, my God. Now, the training thing, I don't know. Like, when they had the spears, I just kept picturing Herman, you know, the war veteran on The Simpsons, like, stabbing the bag. I just... It's just so well worn, and it, you know, it's already been done in the Clone Wars. What did you guys think of the whole training thing? Like, the second time I watched it, because I enjoyed the end, it didn't bug me as much. But the first time, I was sort of just like, I know exactly how this goes.
Weirdly, I think I either needed more of it or less of it, and I'm not quite sure which one.
It was an odd amount because, you know, they were running up against, well, we have a lot of preparation to do, but only a limited amount of minutes in the episode. So I think it was running up against that for sure, because it was really, if there was anything that was a cliche, it was those scenes, you know, training the farmers to fight with specifically sticks.
It did pay off, because at the end you see a few of them use the sticks and use them proficiently, even the one who is holding it backwards. But it was a little bit weird.
Yeah, I just sort of was thinking, I'm not sure what it would be, but just like, just a different weapon than a spear. It just, I don't know, it just seemed a bit on the nose. A bit on the nose. So Kara and Mando, they go to set the trap. What were those cauldrons? They go to the Marauder's place and they've got these cauldrons of something that one of the Marauders ends up getting dunked into.
I thought it was their food.
I thought it... Someone said it was the stuff they were brewing from the shrimp.
Okay, that would...
And it might have been I don't remember what it was called, but the flagon of whatever liquid. So they were basically making moonshine from the shrimp.
Mm.
The stuff that Cara Dune says, you could stay on this planet and sip this and watch your kid grow up. Like,
Yeah, that stuff.
Okay. So then they have a pretty rudimentary fight. It's kind of dark. Can't really see what's going on. Kind of makes sense. Like the Kara Mando fight was sort of far more dynamic because they're both great fighters. Did you like how I just did a little karate? That was a bit of grime.
It was nice.
There.
Yeah.
And the beauty of attacking a tent is BYO backdoor if you need. Super sweet. And I sort of thought it was kind of cool, and it sort of fit the whole narrative that the Marauders wouldn't be that good at AT-STing, given their marauding past. Like the AT-ST, mm-hmm. I felt like it wasn't getting driven as succinctly. Like, I feel like if you had like a guy with a little gray ice cream container on his head, he'd be able to do a lot of damage compared to the Marauders. How does that check in with your canon sources, Tom?
I'm more wondering how they got it.
Ooh.
But yeah, it looked not too different from how it was used on Endor, but at the same time, maybe it would have avoided the giant puddle in front of it.
Yeah, because on Endor it was like ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. Like it was quite like
yeah, this was all
yeah, it kind of felt like when I saw Rashad try to fly this Millennium Falcon drone at my son's birthday. It was it was very odd. Now, this pulse rifle, Tom, the disintegrator rifle, when Carl Weathers mentioned it, like he said, nice weapon or whatever, I felt like it might have been a custom thing that he had. But then Cara Dune sort of grabs it, calls it a pulse rifle, and seems very familiar with it. Are these disintegrators rare, or what's up? What's your read?
My read is that because she is part of the Alliance Special Forces, she would be very familiar with all kinds of weaponry, no matter how rare.
Okay.
Yeah, she might have been a specialist, too, that she would know all of them.
Okay. Then she gets it in the eyeball, and then the Mando, it falls over. The Mando drops a grenade and does an 80s Ride the Blast jump to safety.
So good.
Mm-hmm. That would make B.A. Baracus proud.
Yes.
That was just so sweet. And even the A-Team reference, like, I'm not sure if this was, like, on purpose or not, but I think it's the Mando that says, "Was that the plan?" And then she says something like that, or maybe it's the other way around. But, of course, you know, Hannibal, at the end of every episode of the A-Team, would say, "I love it when a plan came together." Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if I'm projecting there or what, but I you know. I
expected him to, you know, somehow chomp a cigar right at the end.
Yes.
And the, yeah.
And then Baby Yoda tell him, "I ain't getting on no plane."
Yeah.
Wow. Do you understand these references, Emily?
I understand them as references that I've heard references of.
Okay, excellent.
Perfect.
I love your Snoke theory sucks little water sipper there. That's
Oh, and the other side is the
excellent. That is a good misuse of the license. A good bootlegging of the license. Then they save the day, and I kind of love this scene with Kara and the Mando where she sort of mocks him for why he can't take his helmet off. Like, just doesn't respect his culture at all, which I guess when I say it like that, it's probably not that cool, but it's in space. It's space culture. So
you can be space racist. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, prune face. There's prune faces. And then, yeah, they mentioned he's been there for a few weeks. And then he says that he's going to leave him in the village. And am I a total sucker? I thought, oh, this is it for Baby Yoda. He's leaving.
Okay, you are.
Yeah. I saw it immediately as a sunk cost. It's like, well, there's no way that amount of art assets is going to be gone in episode 4 for the VFX budget. Like, we spent all this time designing him. He's going to be in multiple episodes for sure.
Tom, are you willing to save any of my dignity?
I thought he might be gone from the show for an episode or two. But yes. Now we're on the Baby Yoda train all the way to season 2, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
It feels like.
Do you think there's without Baby Yoda, there's no Mandalorian? Like, are these Ebony and Ivory living in perfect harmony?
I think it's more the story of this season. Baby Yoda is the story of this season, because other than Baby Yoda and the Mando, I don't think there's been anything, any character or location that's been in all 4 episodes.
Well, they sort of wrap up Cara Dune. They make out like she's not going to be in it again. I'm not sure if there's... Someone said that there's other clips, like in the preview, mm-hmm.
In one of the trailers. There was.
Okay. Because I'm a fan. I like her saying Star Wars lines is so cool.
It's a very Star Wars thing, though, if you think about it. I don't know if you remember from Star Wars to Jedi, but George was talking about the sail barge from Return of the Jedi, and he's saying how everyone complained.
I vaguely remember that scene.
I'm sure you do. But George was saying that everyone's complaining that the sail barge was this big, expensive set, and they use it for 5 minutes and blow it up. But his philosophy was, you have these giant things, and you show them for only as much as the story requires and no more, because you want people to say, that was awesome, we need to see more of that, instead of, oh, let's move it on to somewhere else. So it's a very Star Wars thing to have these locations and characters that we as an audience enjoy and then move on to something else so that the story can move along with it.
Don't you sometimes wish that 80s George Lucas was there to have a chat to late 90s George Lucas?
Yes. Yes, I wish 80s George Lucas co-wrote the prequel trilogy.
Yeah, I respect all the George Lucases, but I feel like sometimes he loses his way. And then the Mandalorians asked to stay, and for this one, I didn't think he was gonna say yes, but I was on edge for his reply. So I'm getting suckered into this show, and then we've got the return of the Fob. Omara asks or tries to take his mask off. She gets mask blocked. Mm-mm. And then for the second time in the series, we hear a gunshot, assume it's heading towards Baby Yoda, and then someone's killing the killer, and this time it's Cara Dune killing was that a Gardenian bounty hunter, Tom?
It looked like it. I couldn't tell for sure.
Okay.
And, you know, the bounty hunter that did that, whether he's Gardenian or not, he was very short-sighted, because it was very clear that Baby Yoda is worth more alive and it would be a much higher bounty. He didn't even try.
A bird in the hand is worth two in the creek? I don't know.
Well, that could have changed. Like, after the Mandalorian burns down Werner Herzog's place and steals Baby Yoda, Herzog could have put out the thing of just get this kid back however you can.
We need the genetic material now. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, he might have the same job as IG-11. Because are there, like, different forces that want different things to happen to Yoju?
Maybe.
That's still unclear.
Or maybe he stopped at the bar and the waitress helped him, and she's like, "Hun, that baby would not stand still."
I don't care how many coins I got flicked. Too hard. Too hard. Now, as I said, this is the second time Blaster Bolt has stepped in with a second to spare. Now, is this like a bit repetitive or some sweet Mando ring theory?
Neither.
I didn't mind it until you called it ring theory.
Yeah. I didn't think of it as repetitive just because that's the way this show is so far for me. I'm enjoying it, and I don't know, I think the storytelling is better than ring theory.
Okay. Cuz when it happened, I was like, "Oh, this sort of seems familiar." But then I was also like, "Oh, but Baby Yoda's okay." And that's all.
It's like, I think the purpose was to kind of establish that this is going to happen over and over again, and we're never going to be safe, so we have to keep running. It's like the end of the Incredible Hulk every week.
Yeah, it was a good it was sort of like a good way to put the pieces of, like, all these people we've just met and we're getting along with. Here's, like, the reason why we can never have them in the show again. We're pulling down the little pond sets, and we're going to put up something else. But we have to see, like, well, you got, like, I'm amped on Cara Dune. Are you guys, like, sharing my Cara hype?
Yeah, I was really surprised. I was, because they sort of had billed her in the promotional stuff. It seemed like she was going to be, like, a co-lead of this show.
Yeah.
So the fact that she doesn't show up until episode 4, and
she's on the poster, I know.
It's, yeah, true. And is maybe gone for, I think she's coming back at some point, but could be gone until the finale, is disappointing. I thought she was going to go with him at the end.
Yeah. I sort of, again, I like the same with like Kuel, the Ugnaught. I love them so much, but I so respect that it's like, we're just leaving them there. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, what was that? That the First Order, the guy that ran the dreadnought at the start of The Last Jedi, Tom.
Cassidy? Oh, Captain Kennedy?
Kennedy. Like, everyone's like, "Oh, I can't believe we can get more of him." And I'm like, no, you come in for 3 minutes, you kill it, and then you die. And then, like, we remember you always. Mm-hmm. But I do want more Cara Dune. I just the way she says,
I think we'll get more for,
yeah,
sure.
The way she says Star Wars lines, it's just, there's such a good comic book charisma about it. I'm like, she's like, "Until our paths cross," and I'm like, yes, cross, cross, cross. And then we get a sweet little E.T. moment with Winter and Yoju. Imagine having to say goodbye to Yoju. Emily, what would you say to Yoju when you, if you had to say goodbye? Would you say, hey, Yoju, I'm going to miss you? What would you say?
I would just be crying too hard to talk.
Would you say, I love you, Yoju?
I would say, I love you, Baby Yoda, and I would kiss him on his cute little head.
And what if he looked up and said, call me Yoju?
First of all, I never want to hear Baby Yoda speak.
Oh. How aware is Baby Yoda? Like...
Because the scene at the beginning of the episode, when he's hitting all the buttons, when he looks the Mando directly in the eye and then leans back and hits that other button, I'm like, so he's not really a baby.
That's classic
toddler behavior.
I will pull you up on that one as a father, Emily.
No, I would say toddler, but like baby and toddler is like what everyone's referring to him as a baby.
This is what Harry does. He's 14 months. Like he will hold up something and look at me and go, uh-oh, and then drop it off the table. They're there to torture you. So I think he's a little torturing thing, but the fact that like he's there drinking tea and he levitated I just sort of feel like maybe like Yojus don't talk until later on, but they're like, cause I feel like it's the talking that makes him seem so much younger. So you want no language.
I think it would be too weird.
He gives little coos and...
Yeah, that I'm okay with.
Yeah, and I think it's a force thing, almost as if he's operating on feel more than actual awareness of what's going on around him at times.
I will need a training montage to accept that, Tom.
No, it's like an innate thing. It's not something that he's been taught, but it's like in episode 2 when he... levitated the giant rhinoceros, he sensed and could feel the danger that he and the Mandalorian were in. It wasn't, you know, no one told him, oh, focus on this, you could lift it up. It was him riding the waves of the emotions around him.
I mean, he understands that the kids don't want him to eat that frog.
Right.
He did understand that. Yeah, he spit it out. But then, you know, what is he? We don't know what he eats besides frogs yet.
Soup.
Yeah, soup, apparently. That's true.
Hey, mate, have you been watching the memes or not? He's loving his soup. Then everyone waves to the very slow cart, matched to Emily's chagrin. The adventure concludes, the music kicks in, and then we realize that we're done with our space adventure for the week. And then... sweet concept paintings. The credits with the concept paintings and this music
are awesome.
Kicks ass. It's so good. It gets me so hyped to watch it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's just, and it's sort of like, it reminds me of those old Ralph McQuarrie folders that everyone used to get. It was very good. Now, first watching, I was not, like, I enjoyed it, but I was tempted to go under 7 or under on my score. That's, I just, the repeated story, but second watch, I got it bumped up. Emily, as the returning guest, what were your, final thoughts and your score out of 10?
I know people have been talking about how short these episodes are, but this is the first one where I really felt that and felt like I could have used a little bit more time. Like I could have used one more scene, maybe with Amara and the Mandalorian, to really have that end where she wants him to stay pay off. I like this episode. I like the characters. It's my least favorite episode so far, but it's still at least a 7.5 for me. I still really enjoyed it and watch it a couple of times and we'll watch it again.
Yeah, I'm getting like some really high quality rewatches in. I am enjoying my rewatches, and I'm just not, I don't rewatch anything really that like I watch like now, like I rewatch, you know, Star Wars movies and stuff, but I've been pounding these a couple times a week. So, I'm very happy with my Mandalorian experience. How about you, Tom?
It's a story that we've heard before in different forms, and I'm sure we could all have put it together in our heads once we realized what was going on, but it told that story well. And I would rank it probably an 8, 8.5, not so much for the story, but more the world and the characters that we got, because I would like to return to these characters. If I had to choose to live on all of the worlds we've seen so far in The Mandalorian, it would be this one. So I liked what we got. And I think all that, you know, like I said, I enjoyed the story, but the other stuff, the characters, the locations, the funky AT-ST with the red eyes, I liked that. And that's what made this episode a winner for me.
So locking in an 8.
Sorry?
I said locking in an 8.
Sure.
8. Yeah. Your review has, it's making me reconsider. I could even up mine another quarter of a point. Who knows, Tom? It's a wild night here. Chris, where are you sitting?
I'd probably go with an 8 as well. I liked the story and the world building on this new world. I would say that the episode did feel short and rushed, and I think this is the kind of story that could have easily spanned 2 episodes and given it a little more room to breathe, and then I think the end would actually have had a little more impact.
And you're locking in an 8, yeah?
I am. Mm-hmm.
I've got one question that I didn't bring up. So he's in his little tent and she brings him food and he looks out to watch him playing and he takes off his helmet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I think the Mandalorians are as skilled as ninjas with the use of shadows. So he knew when he took the helmet off, he was in shadow. No one could see his face, so it didn't count.
If Baby Yoda is out there, everyone's looking at Baby Yoda. No one's looking at the weird guy eating bread and soup in the window.
Mm-hmm. That's some excellent Star Wars massaging there, Tom. You are one of the best in the game. But yeah, he took off the helmet and started eating. And I'm like, what are you doing, dude? Like, because like, there's one theory going around that they only show their faces to their like family. And so that would explain like Sabine, and it's like, but she showed her like her head to anyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
we didn't mention the one big line where the Mandalorians took me in.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I sort of always, I didn't find that in this, cause he was a foundling. I sort of just,
but well, I sort of thought he was a foundling Mandalorian, because I was working under the assumption of those scenes that we saw of his flashbacks were on Mandalore or a Mandalorian planet, and that was like the big thing.
Ah, because I've assumed they weren't anything to do with Mandalore, and then he gets found by the Mandalorians. That's how I was taking it in.
Okay. I mean, that's how I'm taking it now. But I thought he was Mandalorian and then, like, found this other sect of Mandalorians.
That's what I thought, too.
I'm not sure. I think you both make great points. So we'll see what the backstory is as it unfolds.
But yeah, as I said, the first episode, the first time I watched it, I was sort of a little bit, you know, like the story was so played out, but watching it again, I just, like, I love the characters. I love Cara Dune. I loved all the little bits of Star Wars sugar we got, little tantalizing things. I'm fascinated how they're going to play out this Yoju thing, how they're going to keep it fresh and like, not make the story drag out, but I sort of feel like if he's not in season two, like people are really going to complain. Sort of like I feel like it's like Yoju's like bigger than the Mandalorian now. Like it's such a pop culture phenomenon. Like even in like the wrestling the other week, they referenced Baby Yoda. Like it's very interesting. But I'm because of the characters, I'm going a 7.75 or 7.5, but then Tom's review pushed me over the edge.
Right.
But I won't go an 8. I won't do it. But
not even because of the Relby Busk connection.
Not even. Maybe the Lothcat could have got me over, but no. But thank you guys so much for coming on the pod. Now, Christopher Mancini, you are wrapping up how many years of the Comedy Film Nerds podcast?
A decade. 10 years of the Comedy Film Nerds podcast with a final show December 12th at the Dynasty Typewriter in L.A. that you will be a guest on.
I will be. What's the worst movie you've ever reviewed on the show?
Probably one of the worst was Polar. That Netflix movie was one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Is that the one with what's Paul
Mads Mikkelsen or however you say his name?
Mads. He made one good film, so
he's a good actor. But that movie was an absolute disaster.
Oh, is that the one where he has the dog?
I think that's John Wick. So.
No. Like that happened in that. Like there was another. I feel like it was the Mads Mikkelsen, and they also like. Because there were like two assassin movies that came out at the same time. One of them was Mads and one of them was someone else. And I can't remember which was
it's entirely possible I might have blocked that out because I was so numbed by the horrible filmmaking, but it's maybe.
Emily noticed the dog and Chris noticed it was a dog, so
yeah.
But you've got a Kickstarter for a graphic novel, The Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master, that wraps up in about a week. And it is my favorite type of Kickstarter where one of the rewards at retail price is to get the product. I can't stand it when there's a Kickstarter to make something and one of the rewards isn't get the actual thing.
Yes.
Like so.
Yeah, and oddly enough, that's the most popular reward.
I call it the pre-order.
That's pretty much what it is. Yeah.
So give us a sizzle, mate.
Absolutely. It's called Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master. It's a 160-page graphic novel. It's a comedy action like a Big Trouble in Little China or like an Army of Darkness where a Donna's Luck Fight Club fighter gets mixed up in a ancient battle between good and evil that's been fought since the days of ancient China. And it's got like comedy, epic fights, surly heroes and angry baristas. So it's got all sorts of really cool, fun things. And it even goes back to like the mythology of when we're talking about like all the samurai movies and the Kung Fu philosophy and how it's been modernized into Star Wars. It's kind of a similar thing where I thought like, well, what happens if like an angry guy from LA who's like a small time crook would actually interact with these old Eastern, you know, philosophies of Kung Fu and peace, and how would those actually intertwine and how would they interact? And at first, very poorly. And that's where a lot of the comedy comes from.
So
it's got dragons too. Dragons, monsters, magic, all sorts of stuff that it should be really fun. And only up till December 10th. So please pledge now.
I love the like Big Trouble in Little China as a touchstone. Because I remember watching it as a little kid and it starts off kind of normal. And then towards the end, like all the sort of the mythology like really busts out and you're like, oh my God, this is not what I expected out of this film.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
So we'll put a link to that in all the show notes, but what's the easiest way to get to it, buddy?
You can go to Kickstarter.com and type in Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master, or you could just go to ComedyFilmNerds.com and hit a link on the homepage.
Nice. And for $20, you get the full digital graphic novel for you digital types. Tom, do you collect the hard copies of Star Wars comics, or you just get the digital?
Sometimes I collect the hard copies too.
Okay.
It depends on the series.
Okay. Well, if you're Tom 1 week, you can hit up the $20 full digital graphic novel. And then if you want to be Tom on another week for $30, you can get the graphic novel in actual printed, here's a spine thing. I find that such a accomplishment in life. Is to be behind publishing something with a spine. I don't know why. I've got a lot of respect for the spine. You know what it is on the bookshelf. Do you know what I mean?
Because it exists. It's in your hand, and you can read it from the other side of the room. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love things that exist. More things that exist for me, please. So yeah, and it would be awesome if you've been a fan of Chris's work on this podcast. Of course, he was part of the very memorable 2 a.m. Force Awakens podcast back in the day, and for all his years doing the Comedy Film Nerds and the LA Podfest, which is where I first got to hang out with Emily. So,
absolutely.
So at least, Chris, you'll be happy that I've guilted Emily into backing at least a copy.
Perfect. You know, any kind of pledge, even a guilt pledge, counts. So that's perfect.
Dude, the guilt economy is pretty strong. Where can we find you on Twitter and all that good stuff, Chris?
You can find me at Chris J. Mancini on Twitter. And then my website is chrisjmancinionline.com.
King of all Toms, where can we track you down on your many audio pursuits and tweeted wisdom?
My Twitter is Tom Chansky. And then as far as podcasts, I'm on the Sith List every week. And then Patreons for Steel Wars, we got Page Wars, Blue Harvest, and The Bad Motivators.
Excellent. And we'll have to make a time to get together this week because we've got the very special reverse episode.
Yes.
Very exciting.
The upside down episode.
Steel Red something.
Yes. Well, this is the deal, Chris. On my Patreon, I've got it very worked out that I don't have time to read any of the new books or comics. King Tom can do it that morning. He will read a novel in the first 24 hours. So I just get him to come on and just tell me everything that happened. So I'm kept up in the canon.
He's your human Cliff Notes.
Yes.
Much.
King Cliff. Emily Lind.
Yes.
Where are you saying unkind things about me on the internet?
I mean, lots of places, but...
No. Okay, non-DM'd bad things about me on the internet.
In specific, you can hear me say bad things about Steel on my ostensibly Star Wars podcast, The Cantabite Dispatch, which I do with my friend Brittany Brown. It is exceedingly not safe for work, but we have a lot of fun. And Tom sends us voicemails because he is a good friend and sends us things when he says he's going to. We like Tom.
Thank you.
But it's going to be
a nice endorsement too.
It's going to be a great two-parter because bad Steel this week, but next week, spoiler alert, I got it in. I got it in.
That's true.
Okay.
But Tom's never spoiled anything for me, so I like Tom better anyway. And also, you can find the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Cantabite Pod, and I am on Twitter and Instagram at EF Lind.
Nice. Love you, Steel. Thank you. I love you too, Emily. Thanks so much, you guys, for coming on the pod. If you haven't already, go back and check out our other chit chats about The Mandalorian, the first four episodes now, either in audio podcast or YouTube form. And there's also our interview with Dominic Pace, who was a bounty hunter on the set of The Mandalorian, with some really good insight about what was going on the day George Lucas was on set and all that good stuff. And join the Patreon if you're keen. For $3 or more, you get all the bonus content, including King Tom with Page Wars and tons of Q&As and fun stuff that we do there. Thank you guys so much. Cannot wait until this Friday. And may that force be with you. Night, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thanks,
Steel. Night.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.